It's live expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Well, I should say good afternoon. Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays, 11 to 1, now 12 to 2 for football here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. The lines are open, 404-872-0750. If you're not following me on Twitter, dive right in. It's at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So the fall, for all these years that I've been on the radio in Atlanta, which I think is like 15 or 16, I have seriously lost count. But for all these years I've been on the radio, autumn in Atlanta means rain. It means a lot of rain. Sometimes that rain is from hurricanes. Sometimes the skies just open up. Who knows? There's always a lot of rain. I remember some falls where we have had 16 inches or 15 or 18, it just ungodly amounts of rain, and everybody makes, you know, Noah and the Ark jokes, and, you know, we all start bailing out our basements. And this is the time of year that we always talk about flood insurance, because for the last 10 years or so, Congress has waited to the very end and even beyond to re-implement the National Flood Insurance Program, and FloodSmart.gov, which is probably closed now that I think about it, given that it's a federal agency. But they've always waited pretty late. And, you know, this time of year, I talk about how important it is for you to protect yourself and to protect your family and to buy flood insurance, because your regular homeowner's insurance will not cover you. It doesn't cover a rising tide of water. These are like the words, if you actually read the fine print, which, as you know, if you listen to this show, I think you should, about everything, rising tide of water does not get covered. Now, if a tree in the middle of a hurricane falls on your roof and the roof rips open and water pours in, that's probably going to get covered because that's wind damage. But rising tide of water will not get covered. And so we talk about flood insurance, and we talk about the National Flood Insurance Program, and I send you to FloodSmart.gov. A year ago, something changed. And what changed is a new law that is now being implemented, and it's being implemented over stages. And what it does is it removes the subsidies that some people get for flood insurance. Now, it seems like most of you would probably say fair is fair, right? You pay your share, I'll pay my share. That's pretty much how it works. And if everybody puts in what's fair and we pay for ourselves, then the bills get paid and the pain is such as it is, right? And there's a lot of pain when you get a flood or a hurricane is shared. But when it comes to flood insurance, there's a lot of pain and it's not being fairly shared. And that's causing everybody else to pay more than they should. Than they should pay if everything was fair. And so this new law got implemented, and it basically said, listen, the flood insurance program is nearly broke. We have to have flood insurance. We have to have it at an affordable level, but it can't be that the thing is running $25 billion in the hole, and the rest of us have to make up for that. And the reason it is because people are living in places that are no longer safe. They are dangerous, it's flood-prone, it's on the coasts, and it may not, you may say, well, 20 years ago it was fine to buy there. Well, 20 years ago is not today, and what we're seeing is that the weather is changing, and the costs, more than anything else, the costs of the disasters are rising uncontrollably. Now, if you look back at disasters in North America, not only are they more frequent, but the financial impact is increasing at a very, very significant rate. Okay? So total losses averaged about $16 billion a year in the 1980s. For a whole decade, each year, you'd have about $16 billion in loss. You know what it is from 2000 to, say, 2010? 2009 to 2010? It is $48.9 billion. Almost $50 billion. Okay, let's go over those two numbers again. In the 80s, 30 years ago, it was $16 billion, And in from 2000 to 2009 or 2010, it was $50 billion a year. That is a huge difference. And you can't just explain it away to, you know, the rising percentage costs of whatever, right? It's the point is that we've got a serious issue. And if you look at the costliest disasters in history, the top 10, the top two are the earthquake, tsunami in Japan, one in 2011, right, and one in 1995. You may have forgotten about that one. Those are the two most costly. The next two belong to Katrina and the 9/11 strike. Then you get one in China, it was an earthquake. And the next three are the U.S., Hurricane Sandy, the earthquake, and the BP oil spill. And the last two of the top 10, 9 and 10, are in China and Thailand, and they're both floods. So let's review again. The top two are tsunamis and earthquakes. Number three, Katrina. Number six, Hurricane Sandy. And the last two are floods. So flood insurance is pretty significant, right? Seven of the top 10 have had flood-related damage that equals almost $1 trillion. So what's going on with the National Flood Insurance Program? Well, it started in 1968. It was a way to extend government insurance to homeowners that flood. And there's 5.5 million U.S. property owners who hold federal flood insurance policies. 80% of them pay market rates. 80% pay their fair share. Every property with a mortgage in a designated floodplain must have flood insurance, right? They're supposed to have flood insurance. Florida, which is has the most federal flood insurance policies in the country, about 260,000, 13% of them are subsidized. Now, how subsidized are they? Pretty subsidized, right? So the premiums could be rising because of the law that went into effect that said you pay your fair share. You want to live on the coast? More power to you. You pay your fair share. Flood insurance premiums could rise tenfold, from $3,000 to $30,000 a year. So there's a lot of haranguing going on, right? Because what does this mean for property values? Well, in Florida, which has been among the hardest hit, that you guys have been hit, Atlanta, Florida, some parts of California, the simple fact that you cannot get flood insurance may mean you can't get a mortgage on a property. If you can't get a mortgage on a property, most people can't buy the property. And so what does that do to property value? It becomes uninsurable and then unpurchasable. And so people are saying, well, you can't do that to me. You can't change the game now. What am I going to do? My property is worthless. But the thing is that those people who live in the property get to keep the flood insurance policies they have until there's a change of ownership or they let the policy lapse. So as long as they keep the policy in place, they get the extended, supported, you know, they don't have to pay their fair share. That's what they have to do. So I understand and I feel the pain of people who can't get flood insurance, but look what goes on in California. California has the same issue with earthquake insurance. Most people don't carry earthquake insurance in California because it's ridiculously expensive, and the you know, deductibles are like $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. In some cases, they're $100,000. So how do you fix this for the 600,000 homeowners who are going to see their rates rise only if they buy new policies or only if they allow their current policies to lapse? What happens if they don't do that? Well, the National Flood Insurance Program is going to be a hole, and everybody is going to be crazy about how, you know, the government doesn't run a program that earns its keep. Well, not everybody's paying their fair share. And so then you say, well, I can't afford to pay my fair share, and so they're trying to find a way down the path that allows people to at least stay in their homes. But it doesn't guarantee them the future value of the property. And the only other thing you can do is you can just say, fine, you know, don't live there. Don't live on the coast. Don't have a water view. Because the rest of us don't want to pay to clean that up. And so the flood insurance program, which I think is one of the most important things that the federal government does, which is to make it as affordable as possible. If you go somewhere else and you try to buy it on the private market, it's a lot more expensive. Even if you're paying your fair share, it's still a break because it's the national flood insurance program. And it only protects you up to $250,000. And a lot of people whose houses are worth more than that have to go to the private market anyway and buy higher priced flood insurance. Or an additional policy to go on top of their national flood insurance. And yet, there are all kinds of people out there who don't have flood insurance, but should have flood insurance. It's a really tough situation. But I can't say that it's okay for somebody to live on the coast and only pay $300 a year for flood insurance if it's going to cost me $300,000 to rebuild their house. That's not fair to me, and it's not fair to you. And so I feel bad for these 600,000 homeowners. I do, because they've maybe spent 20, 25 years in their house, and they've paid off their mortgages, and they've been good citizens, and they've done what they're supposed to do. But unfortunately, the rest of us don't want to pay the bill when so many of these disasters are going to the stratosphere. And the cost to rebuild are so high. It's too much money. We all can't afford it. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, 18 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned for more of the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions, only on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, online, thinkglink.com and at Glink. 25 minutes past the hour, Robert joins me on the line. Hi, Robert.
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I have some property that I lease, and to all... option to buy, but...
Are you renting, or do you own and you're renting it out to somebody else?
Well, it's a maker's, and I lease it out to the person that originally had a contract to buy it, but she couldn't get financing, so she wanted an option to buy it later on, but it hasn't come about.
How long has it been?
Done anything on it.
How long has it been since she's been living in the property?
Excuse me?
How long has she been renting the property from you?
About a year.
Okay. And did she pay you a non-refundable option fee for that property?
Well, she's been paying the lease.
So,
more rental.
Yeah. So, Robert, what people do with lease options, and I wish you had researched this just a little bit more before you went out and did it.
Mm-hmm.
What people often do is they charge a non-refundable option fee. So, Robert, I own a property. You want to rent it. And I'm going to charge you $1,000 non-refundable for the option of a one-year option to buy the property. If you don't buy it at the end of the year, you will have to pay me another option fee. Or I'm going to sell the property wherever I want to sell it. And so I don't know what your contract says, but it should have... You should have had a lawyer look at it, first of all, and you should have figured out what you're going to do to put some timing around this for this person. Now, does she at least pay the rent on time? Does she pay the rent on time?
Yes. The only thing is that she's not living there at all.
She's not living there, but she's paying the rent? Who's living there?
Nobody's living there. It's just makers.
Okay, so Robert, you need to get back control of this property. She's renting it and paying the rent. Go see what your lease says. I assume you have a signed lease. If you didn't have a signed lease, you need a signed lease. I'd have a lawyer look at it. Say to the lawyer, I want to get rid of this thing. I would go to her and say, you got to tell me yes or no. You buying it or not buying it, because I'm going to put it on the market, and then I'm going to start showing it. And you have to understand what your rights are in regard to showing it so that she gets the proper notice, that you can get access to the property, and that things don't go haywire from here. But you did this on a whim. You didn't think it through. and I really hope it doesn't come back to bite you. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. We will be back in a moment with more of your questions next on News Talk WSB. It's 1236 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinklink.com, and at Glink on Twitter, at G-L-I-N-K. And if you follow me on Twitter, you will know all the different things that I have just tweeted out, like about the National Flood Insurance Program, including a way to find your own flood risk in Georgia. Joe joins me on the line now from Chamblee. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Elise. Retired now, working back then, but... Remember when the DOT building was under 6 feet of water there, the interstate, the Sweetwater Creek floods? How much of Atlanta is under this built on floodplain? Do you know?
Well, I don't know, although I do know that it's gotten a whole lot worse. And so the Georgia Flood Mapping Program, which actually falls under Georgia's Department of Natural Resources, the Environmental Protection Division.
Okay.
So if you go to georgiaepd.org,
okay.
And it was a little bit hard to find. I saw that you were going to ask this question up on my call screening software, and I thought, well, let me see how hard it would be to actually find this.
Yes, ma'am.
And so I have been able to confirm that they should be done with the entire remapping of it.
Yes, ma'am.
And yet, it's too complicated, unfortunately, for me to read it and then analyze it and then tell you about it right now. And I only had 5 minutes. So, but here's what I did find out. There, you can look on a website called GeorgiaDFirm.com. It's Georgia Flood Mapping and Assessment Planning from the Department of Natural Resources. It's a .com, not an ORG, and not a .gov, but it's GeorgiaDFirm.com. And when you're on that page, what you can do is you can go to the Georgia Flood Mapping Program and then find your flood risk. And it allows you to actually type in your address, and it will tell you what the flood risk is. In addition to that, you can locate a different property, or you can create a flood hazard report for your neighborhood. So it allows you to do that as well. There's also a link that helps you find areas of flood risk change. And this is the part that there was no way for me to get this much detail down. But it's a huge map, and it would allow you, I think, to be able to see it. So there should be a pop-up. I don't know that the website's working perfectly well, but that's the place that I would go and look. And it does go back and talk about... all of these changes and sort of what's gone on. The AJC last did a story, maybe more recently than this, but I found one from August of 2011. And that's what tipped me off that FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, had kind of gone through this whole extensive remapping project and that it should have been completed last year. So then I went from there to look up to see if I could find it. And there are areas that have now, large areas, swaths of areas in the Atlanta metro area and in the whole state that have been changed. For example, the AJC cited a 107-mile stretch of the upper Chattahoochee River Basin where they were reassessing it. But they also changed the flood maps in Fulton, Cobb, Coweta, DeKalb, Douglas, Forsyth, and Gwinnett. All of them are now part of this 100-year basin versus what might have been a 500-year basin.
Uh-huh.
Flood basin, now it's 100 years. So what they're showing you is that flooding is coming more frequently. It's coming in bigger areas.
Uh-huh.
And your second part of your question, I think, is probably who's insurable or not insurable. And I don't have that answer. I think for a price, everything is insurable.
I can understand that. I was just curious because you brought it up, and I was here during those major floods.
Yeah.
And I remember there were houses that the water over there at Lithia Springs, the water was above the roofs.
Yeah.
This was during
that.
The Sweetwater Creek floods, and then there was that flooding downtown. And then there was the flooding out there at Snapfinger, and then there was the flood, yada, yada. I could go on and on and on. But I'm wondering how many people even remember back then.
Well, we do seem to have collective amnesia for anything longer ago than maybe 6 months. I don't know if it's my age. I don't know if it's just what's going on in the world. It all seems to be moving faster and more furiously, and we're all just so hyper-focused on all these other major things, right?
I mean, the CRS is a part of my thing now. I mean, you know.
It's all just a blur. I don't know about for you, Joe, but for me, it's a blur. So to your point, it is hard to remember why it is we're redoing this, and that's why I started out today, because this new program, this new law that went through a year ago, nobody even remembers that it went through. Nobody even remembers that they're lifting the subsidies, and that's happening over a period of time. It's 1 year ago this week. And so I really wanted to call attention to this. The New York Times has written a really excellent story about it. And I think everybody has to be concerned, because even if you're grandfathered in and you're keeping your house, what is the cost going to be for somebody else? How is that going to force you to discount your house price when you go to sell, because somebody is not going to be able to pay $3,000 for the policy? They have to pay $30,000 for the policy. Uh-huh. And that's what they have to pay, or they can't get a mortgage. And how does that factor in to what home values truly are? And I think that's really where we're going with this. It will have a direct impact. The amount that you have to pay for insurance premiums directly impacts what your home's value is. It's as if, I got to say, it's like being in a condo and you have monthly assessments, and a lender says, fine, we're just going to subtract the monthly assessment from what you can actually afford to get for a mortgage, and that's going to be part of the calculation. And I think that's going to make things very difficult for people who are in floodplains. I don't necessarily think that we should be subsidizing them, though, because everybody chooses to live where they live. And you know what? It's beautiful on the coast. It's just really expensive. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Ann joins me on the line. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
So, welcome to the program. What can I do for you today?
I was calling because I inherited a property in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
There is no mortgage on it, no liens. Everything is up to date, taxes and all.
Mm-hmm.
I handed the keys over to the realtor in August as is. We got an offer, very good offer, but it was an investment between two people, two companies or something. When we
okay,
went,
one's going to take the second floor and the other one's taking the first floor? How's that work exactly?
I think what it is, they have one person that went out to find the house, and then he went to another investor, and they were together putting together to buy it.
Okay, fair enough.
A couple of weeks ago, we went to the office for closing. I signed off on everything. The figures were fine. Everything was moving. But my realtor and I sat there for 3 hours, and no one was telling us what was going on, and we were kind of miffed. Then one of the guys comes running out talking about it's over. They not giving me the money they had promised. We didn't know what was going on. So, in all essence, we...
Wait, where were you? Were you in D.C. sitting there?
We were in Maryland.
Okay. You were in Maryland with the agent.
Uh-huh.
Did you have an attorney?
We didn't have an...
Did you have your own attorney, not the attorney who works for the lender for the other side?
No, the only... was the realtor and myself.
Okay.
And
so who looked over your documents? Who made sure that these people were real people? Did they put down a down payment did they put down a good faith down payment or something?
There was no down payment. We had a contract.
Okay, contracts are great, Ann, but if I want to show you that I am really serious about buying your house in a really hot market, or even not, I have a good faith down payment that I put down. You put down money, and you say this is 3% or 1% or $1,000 or $5,000, and you put it down. I put it down because I want you to know I'm a serious buyer and I'm willing to walk away from that money if I screw up. They didn't do that, did they?
No. Uh-uh.
And how much is the property worth?
$330,000.
So your real estate agent, who we'll talk in a moment about how you found her, your real estate agent left you hanging to dry. She left you sitting out there with a third of $1 million property completely paid off when you aren't local to have some people make offers with no good faith deposit and a contract that no lawyer saw on your behalf. Is that right? Is that the situation?
Well, the lawyer saw the contract afterwards.
Whose lawyer?
the realtor whom he had talked to on previous times or had worked with before. And no one could understand how this came about.
So what did they do? They just walked away from the closing?
Well, they're in negotiations trying to reach a settlement between the two.
Who?
Between the guy who...
The two investors?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What do you care about them? You want your house back on the market.
Right, exactly.
So who's the lawyer? Whose lawyer is it? Okay, let me be more clear. Have you hired a lawyer that you are paying to represent you in this?
Well, this is what I'm trying to find out, whether I have to go that route. That's really what I guess I'm trying to find out, because it's been going on since, like I said, the end of August.
Okay. Let me tell you where you are right now. You've been screwed. You've been screwed by the agent and screwed by these investors. It's been an incredibly hot market. D.C. is hot. It's a third of $1 million, and they've tied it up, and nobody's answering to you. You got to fire the agent, and you fire these guys. You send them. You hire your very own lawyer, and you say to that lawyer, I want out of this deal. I want out from the agent and out from these two guys, and I want it done by the middle of this week. And you find enough. You go back to Maryland, and you find an agent who comes much more highly recommended than this person, who is not representing your interest. You can, if this is the top brokerage firm in that area, then you go to the managing broker and say, it is outrageous how I've been treated the last 2 months. Outrageous. And I hold you personally responsible for it. And this agent is done. I'm done with this agent. I'm done with these buyers. I have an attorney. I want a new agent. And I want it today. And I want this house back on the market. And I want it sold.
Okay.
Because this is outrageous. You have been royally screwed, Ann. I'm sorry to say it, but you've let it happen. You've got to get back control of this property. You got to get back control of the situation. And you make it happen for yourself.
Okay.
It's a third of $1 million. And the worst part of all is this was an inheritance.
Right.
And you want to do right by the person who gave this to you, and you're not.
Okay.
I'm sorry to come down a little hard on you, Ann, because you sound like a nice lady. But I got to tell you, these people, I don't really care what goes on with two investors who didn't put a good faith deposit down, who haven't come to the table. The agents lost control, and they're all taking advantage of you. And I'm mad. And if you're not as mad as I am, then you don't have the kind of energy it takes to do right by this inheritance. You've got to get mad because you've been screwed. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com. At midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
It's 56 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. The number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Follow me online at Glink. I don't know if you could tell, but I got a little hot under the collar about how Ann is being treated. But anybody who inherits property, you know that inheritance, you've got to do right by it. If you don't do right by it, then shame on you. And Ann has allowed herself to be jerked around by a real estate agent who's for whom this deal is way out of control, by two investors who are fighting amongst themselves. Nobody asked for a good faith deposit. Everybody should get a good faith deposit. What is going on with that deal? And the simple answer is she's got to get back control. She's got to cancel the deal, cancel out with these guys. They're losers, clearly. They don't know what they're doing. Maybe they're first-time investors. Maybe they should get my intentional investor series, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. I guarantee it doesn't say mess around with the owner of the property and don't put a good faith deposit down. That is not the message for my intentional investor series. These guys are clowns, and the agent who's there is allowing it to happen. And Ann, who's here and has a third of a $1 million property, $1 million, is just watching that money drain away, because every month that that property is on the market and not selling is money that has to be spent to the maintenance and the upkeep, the electrical bill. I mean, it's not that it's cost-free to do a listing. That agent is not treating her right, and it really makes me mad. I hate that. Hate when my listeners are not treated appropriately. Carmen joins us on the line from Lilburn. Hi, Carmen. How you been?
Hi, Elise. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. What's on your mind?
Good. I have a quick question for you. I'm very much familiar with an area in Gwinnett County. You know, I'm a real estate agent, and that ever since I've known that area 17 years ago, water keeps coming from, on the road. So it's obvious that there is, you know, a spring underneath. But the problem is everybody that buys the house, the house goes into foreclosure because they realize that there is water problem in the backyard. And when we spoke to the county, apparently the county knows. Why doesn't the county do something?
The county may not be able to do something, Carmen. Unfortunately, these properties, and this is one of the things we were talking about, there is a cost to floods, and there's a cost to trying to control water that's rising in different places, and Georgia has to come up with 20% of the money that FEMA gives it, and there just may not be enough money to fix that area. And if so, those owners know it and they get out, and that's all they can do. 59 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your call, Carmen. 404-872-0750. We're going to do Glinkonomics when we come back. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Back, everybody, to the Elise Klink Show. It's 107, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750, and I will pay for the call. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I will pass that along to my boss, Pete Spriggs, but we'll pay for it if you want. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online Twitter, lots of activity based on what I just said. Somebody said to me, so you like paying taxes, Elise? And I said, I am proud to pay every dollar of taxes I owe, and I would rather pay not a dollar more. But it's a privilege to be able to do this. I do wish that we could get our political system a little bit more in line. And just today, the central bankers around the world who are meeting with the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, they have their annual meetings. They wrapped up yesterday, and they called for pressure on the U.S. to resolve its budget impasse to remove the dark cloud of default hanging over the global economy. It isn't just about what happens here. It is really about what happens around the world. That's what you get with a flatter world. That's what you get with an interconnected world. Right? It isn't just our economy, which is doing better than a lot of other places. We lead the world in this kind of stuff. And getting it to the place where the government is shut down, and now on the 17th, we're going to officially run out of money. And yes, they've said we can keep paying our bills until the 1st of November. Wow, that's a relief. I'm glad to know we have another 2 weeks to go. None of this makes me happy. And it shouldn't make you happy either. Because when you're in a situation where there's uncertainty, global uncertainty. It's just bad for everybody. And so now the finance ministers and the central bank governors from around the world are stepping up the pressure on the U.S. to resolve the budget impasse. The Republicans in the Senate have thrown up their hands, the Republicans in the House have thrown up their hands and said it's up to the Senate. It's now shifting over to the houses. Meanwhile, life is going on, right? So we've got states stepping in saying this is insane. New York just stepped in this morning, as you heard on the news just now, saying that it will reopen the Statue of Liberty, which is nice. We have other national parks that the states are stepping forward to be able to open because, think about it, it isn't just the park, right? It's all the people who run businesses that supply the people who are either in the park or come to visit the park. It's bed and breakfasts, and it's hotels, and it's, you know, the people who work in the park, and it's the people who are outside and doing all the side trips around the parks. There's such a ripple effect that goes on just with closing one park. Now close them all. Close them all and see what happens, right? And we're seeing it. Now, there's been this funny story going on all day, well, all weekend, that the shutdown means no new beer from craft brewers. Why? Because there's some obscure agency that quietly approves new breweries, recipes, and labels. And then that in itself creates a whole ripple effect throughout the craft industry where customers are expecting that new beers that have been promoted as coming out would actually come out, and apparently they won't be. Okay? So we're seeing different kinds of effects just because of the shutdown. Now, what about the states? This is another thing going around this week. What are the top 10 states being most affected by the shutdown, right? Every day, millions of dollars, it's costing us, right? Me, you, everybody who pays taxes. It's just costing us more money. So what are the 10 states? Well, the 10th most effective state is Hawaii. It's number one in the real estate category because housing is everything in Hawaii. So staffing shortages at the FHA, lenders can't verify income via tax returns, all of that is going to delay closings, which is going to delay issues for people. My husband Sam, who's a real estate attorney, cannot get an EIN for a company that he needs to open for a client so they can go and complete a purchase. What happens when you start blowing the 1031 tax-free exchange timelines? Millions of dollars are going to be lost. Millions of dollars. It's going to really profoundly, dramatically affect people and companies. Idaho. You wouldn't think Idaho is the 9th most effective state, but it is. Why? It has the most federal contracting dollars per capita. 8th for the Small Business Administration loans. During the furlough, non-accepted employees at the SBA will no longer be permitted to utilize SBA mail or other federal resources. The loan process is going to be delayed. Payment for these contractors, delayed. Idaho, I would not have put them on the list. They're number 9. Colorado, 8th most affected state. Why? Federal contracting dollars, Small Business Administration loans. New Mexico, number 7. It's 6th among states with the most federal employees per capita. That means local economies are affected because people aren't getting paid. 4th in the states with the most federal contractors. Maryland, 6th most affected, right next to D.C., which is on this list also, not a state, I know. 2nd highest amount of federal employees per capita. 4th most federal contract dollars per capita. 3rd state most heavily exposed to the real estate market. Right? Who knows? Maybe that's what's happening to Ann. Well, that's only the last week, but still. Maine, 5th most affected state. Heavy exposure to SBA loans, Social Security funding, real estate. It has the most 5th state with the most veterans per capita. Then you have D.C., obviously, right? It's the epicenter of everything. It's got the most affected area of the nation when it comes to federal employees per capita, right? Everybody lives and works locally. Alabama, surprisingly, 3rd most affected state, right? 4th with the most Social Security funding. 8th for the most FAFSA applications per capita, right? It's the student loan application. And while you have not affected Social Security payments, which, by the way, were announced, I think this week, that it's going to be the lowest increase, like, in 20 years, you got to wonder what happens to that state if the benefits get interrupted. Alaska, second most affected state. Third of states with the most federal employees per capita and federal contracting dollars per capita. Fourth most affected state for the disruption of SBA loans. There's only 560,000 people in the entire state, but they have maybe the most veterans per capita of any state. 3.8 million veterans will not receive their disability payments next month if the government shutdown extends into late October. A chunk of those are in Alaska. And finally, the state that's considered to be most affected by the government shutdown is Virginia, right outside of D.C., heavy exposure to federal employees, federal contracting dollars, second most veterans per capita. It's surprising who's affected by this. And now let's take a look at what happened with the stock market this week, which was dropping. It was well below. It was like 14.7 or 14.8 the other day. It had dropped below. And my prediction was, if you recall, that until any hope of a deal, it was just going to continue to decline. And so we saw a 200-point-plus decline last week. And then all of a sudden, it looked like there might be a deal. And so, zoom, it started coming back. And it ended the week. Friday was up 111 points, a real roller coaster last week, at 15,237. But the longer this goes on, the more uncertainty there is, the more nervous world markets are going to be. It's not a good thing. And now the central bankers and the finance ministers from around the world who are at the annual IMF and World Bank conference said, U.S., resolve this. Get past it. Remove the dark cloud of default that's hanging over the global economy. 404-872-0750, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Let's go back to the phones. Dwight joins me on the line from Marietta. Hi, Dwight.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. What can I do for you today?
Just want to tell you I love your program.
Well, thank you.
I have a question about PMI.
Mm-hmm.
I bought my house several years ago. I didn't have enough money to put down, and I was required to take PMI. So I says, okay, that means I have insurance on the property in case something happens to me.
Yep.
And my understanding is that if I die, then the property would be paid off, the lender would be paid off. Is that correct?
No, not if you have private mortgage insurance. So private mortgage insurance is attached to a loan if you, the buyer, do not have 20% to put down on the property. It is not right. Mortgage credit insurance. Mortgage credit insurance is completely different. Mortgage
okay.
credit insurance is if you die, the property gets paid off. I don't like mortgage credit insurance. Because you pay a whole lot for a declining liability, right? Every month you pay the mortgage, a piece of that gets paid down. So you keep paying higher and higher premiums when the liability is less and less.
Okay, so actually what I have is no insurance at all then.
You don't have insurance on the property. Private mortgage insurance, if you didn't put down 20%, it allowed you to buy the property, and credit insurance would have paid it off. What you really need, if you're looking at the difference between, if the end goal, Dwight, is to have insurance to help your family pay the mortgage if you die suddenly, what you need is a term insurance policy. And if you're young, healthy, and a non-smoker, that's going to be very affordable. And you should buy it for not just the amount of the mortgage, but a little bit extra, because you're going to want your family to have the choice of whether to pay off that loan or use it for living expenses. So you've got to go back and look and see what kind of insurance you actually have, and then you've got to start the conversation of how much you actually need in order to help your family survive what is, I'm sure, would be devastating loss of life to them. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750 News Talk WSB.
It's 1:24 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America one house at a time. We're going to do a quick prize pack. The value is $438. It's a really cool one. It includes a family four-pack of tickets to see the Gwinnett Gladiators take on Greenville on opening night, April 18th at the Gwinnett Arena. A pair of tickets to the Petit Le Mans, October 16th through the 19th at Road Atlanta. A gift certificate for two to the 2013 Camping World Good Sam Rally, October 17th through the 20th at the Atlanta Motor Speedway. The weekend prize pack is presented by McDonald's, the cafe. I'm loving it. Call the prize pack line now, 404-741-0750, and we will take the fifth call. Be nice to Crystal. She's picking up the phones today. All right, Roy wants to know why the government needs to be involved in tobacco. Is that right, Roy? Roy, why can't I hear you? Let's try that.
Concerned about their involvement in. I think the shutdown, though, makes it abundantly clear to all of us that the federal government is involved in our lives far more than we thought. You and I have talked in years past. I'm a real estate broker, and I knew that we would find that creeping into our lives with the shutdown. I just found a new one out, though, a 1039 or 1031. Thank goodness I don't have one of those going right now.
A craft brewery in your backyard?
No, I don't. But the point is that why does the federal government need to be involved in as much as they are? And we're learning that they are far more involved. And this is the first meaningful discussion that our government has had on budget matters in over a decade. I think it's long overdue, and I know it's painful for all of us.
So let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Roy, because it's a really interesting, you bring up an interesting question. Why should the government be involved in approving things that you and the rest of the public are going to ingest? Right? Because if you go down that path and you say, why are they involved in the Bureau of Alcohol? Which, by the way, the federal government's been regulating alcohol for a long time. Remember Prohibition? So it isn't just craft.
Washington.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time.
Producers of whiskey and right. that was ever known. Of course,
so are you
the most wealthy individual ever in America.
But are you saying that the government should also not be involved in anything that we eat or drink? Why accept alcohol when you're selling it to mass people? I mean, are you saying that they shouldn't be regulating what goes in our kids' mouths? That it shouldn't be doing? I think you have to really sort of ask yourself, where do you want to draw the line? Because, sure, it sounds silly to say the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, which is part of the Treasury Department, and is responsible for approving new breweries, recipes, and labels. It sounds ridiculous to say that they have to decide if I can drink Sam Adams' new flavor. But I also think it's really important that we're regulating the food that's out there and that people aren't allowed to just sell anything and tell you that it's good for you or it's alcoholic or whatever. You have to understand where the line is. For my money, I want to know what I'm drinking, I want to know what I'm eating, and I want to know that my kids are safe and that the food situation is safe. And I just think that you have to understand it isn't just that one thing and that you can't just say, we're not going to have any involvement by the government because it saves us money. Well, I think you also have to wonder how we're going to save lives. 28 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. It's 1:36 on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm having a very interesting conversation online right now on Twitter, at Glink, at GLINK, with one of our listeners who's challenging the idea that the government actually has to regulate food safety, which is sort of interesting. Bill joins me now from Smyrna. Bill, you also want to weigh in on this, right?
Yeah, I think it's a little naive to think the government really can protect us from all the evils out there that exist. GMO is a classic example of that. You know, on one hand, you're having over and over occurrences with poisoning of production lines of food, one nature or another, intentionally, unintentionally, who knows. But to think that somehow we're going to have government protect us from these types of events is, I think, naive at best.
Really? So now, who would you have protect us?
Well, you know, I think if anything, you should probably look at it state by state basis. But it's really not going to be in anybody's best interest if long term, if companies historically, like the Chinese, look at the issues involved with toothpaste and baby formula and all the other issues. I think that you'd have
to... Are you comparing to the way that the U.S. regulates its food supply with the way the Chinese government regulates its food supply? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think...
Really? Because I don't think it's the same thing.
I think it's a couple notches above it, but it's not a lot above it, is what I'm saying. You're getting a really false sense of security if you think the United States government is...
I'm really saying that when you put the fox in charge of the hen house... It's really not a good idea. Look what happened with Moody's and the rating agencies, which was really, in the housing world, the fox in charge of the hen house. It doesn't work.
And Arthur Anderson and all the others. But the point being is people have to be able to exert a certain amount of firmness on their own through groups or, I don't know exactly, through private agencies. Just the marketplace itself demanding that You don't have GMO products. You don't have this. And pretty soon...
The marketplace, yeah. You know what, there's no... It's really... I think that's a little naive, Bill, because I think the marketplace doesn't even know... Nobody knew about BPO. Nobody knows the fine details of food biotechnology. It is so complicated, and you need people who are really independent, who aren't taking money, who don't have clients, who don't have services that they're selling on the other side to be regulating the food supply. Like, that just doesn't work for me. And if it works for you, that's fine, but it does not work for me.
Granted, that's a valid point. As valid as the big pharma is not going to accept their responsibilities for mercury and thermosol and many other issues. All I'm saying is the marketplace has got to rise up and demand that certain standards are met. It's
but who sets the standards? Who sets the standards is the question. And I don't think that you should let private industry set the standards because they're in the private world and they will take advantage of it because the Wall Street demands are there.
I accept your fox in the chicken coop analogy very well. All I'm saying is that to think that you have got a government that will ultimately intervene on behalf of the citizen is naive. I think there's got to be better checks and balances. It's like... I've advocated for quite some time the Federal Reserve be audited by the 50 attorney generals because there's nobody else that's going to basically step in and correct the wrongs that they've done. Neither will it happen with all these other agencies that exist out there. And many times they could have been eliminated a long time ago and a better substitute could have been implemented in the marketplace.
Well, I'm all for better substitutes, but I don't see an answer out there right now. And if the answer is just fox in charge of the hen house, I'm not going for it. Until there's a better solution, I'm all about solutions. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know that I'm about solutions. And I listen to every single opportunity out there for solutions. I've had shows just on the financial crisis and possible solutions. We went weeks and weeks with people calling in with really good, strong ideas and put those out there for everybody to see. And yet, all you can say... is that the answer can't be that the federal government does it and we need private industry. I'm saying to you, fox in charge of the hen house, because I can't see a way that big enough private industry doesn't have to answer to Wall Street, and that just changes the economics every single time. Thanks for your call. 404-872-0750. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Jonathan, welcome to the program. Jonathan?
Hi, sorry. My question, me and my wife are looking at buying a house here in the next couple months, and I was just wondering if the government does default on its loans, would that be good for us? Would the housing market actually take another recession? Thank you.
So that's an interesting question. So you're wondering if you should not buy property now because you think that if the government goes into default, property prices will drop and interest rates will drop, and so it'll be a better time than it is right now to buy. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
I have no idea, because the government has never defaulted before. And we're a whole lot more interconnected than we were the last time we had a government shutdown. So could it happen that way? Maybe. But housing never moves at the same step that everybody else moves at, right? Housing always moves at its own pace, and it falls at a different time than the stock market. It rises at a different time. What you could say is that if the government defaults, the stock market's going to go bananas and people are going to get very, very nervous. But I would see it locked down. And by the way, it's really hard for you to buy a house right now if you need any sort of government help, like an FHA mortgage, because you simply can't get one. And so the government defaulting is going to lock down on the ability of people to actually close transactions. So it might be cheaper, and it might be less expensive from a mortgage situation, but I just don't know if you'll be able to get it done. Does that make sense?
Yep, that's kind of the risk that we take. If we wait, maybe we can get financing. You don't know.
I got to tell you, interest rates have come down a lot in the last couple of weeks from where they were. I don't think interest rates are going to get much cheaper unless we really have a massive crash. And that's always possible. There's all kinds of possibilities out here. But okay, home prices are still good, and interest rates are still low. And if you're waiting for a massive crash, I wouldn't, because I think everybody's going to come to their senses this week, and we're going to see some sort of deal that's going to push this. At the very least, it'll kick the can down the road 6 or 8 weeks, maybe to the end of the year, and negotiations are going to start in earnest, and everybody's going to know that everybody's willing to die in the sword, and then they're all going to get serious about talking about it. That's what I think is going to happen this week. I don't think we might get past the 17th or to the morning of the 17th just to see who's calling who's bluff, but I do think we're going to have a deal. So go out and buy your house, all right? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. It's 44 minutes past the hour. Larry joins me on the line. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Elise, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, the biggest problem with these craft beers is the application fee that they have to register these labels. They don't submit the beer to be tested to see how much hops is in it or anything like that. If they can't register the label with the state, then they can't put the beer on the market. So it's the application fee that is becoming the problem, because nobody can approve the labels. All they have to do is state the alcohol content on the labels.
Okay, and you think
so that
they...
So that's the problem is that nobody's approving these labels because
right.
They're saying they have nobody to work on it.
Right,
so
because nobody's allowed to work on it.
Plus, they have to pay the price to register the labels, and that's where the big problem is coming in with these craft breweries, because they got beer out there they can sell, but it's the only beer that's already been approved on their labels.
Great. Well, thank you for the explanation. We appreciate it.
All righty, thanks.
Thanks. Have a good one. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Patricia joins me on the line from Snellville. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. What's going on?
Well, I love your show, and I agree with pretty much everything you say. My comment is, what has happened to America? It's called greed. Greed for the congressman, Republican and Democrat, and greed on all levels. And really, the moral fabric of our country has become self. There's no foundation for our kids from a religious sense of base, where when you grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you seemed like you feared God, so there was some fear for doing things wrong. Now there's no fear, you do what's wrong, and, you know, they don't care. Nobody cares. It's all about making them almighty dollar.
Well, I think you're not wrong about saying that a lot of this comes down to greed. But I will say that reasonable people can have a non-religious core of goodness. And they can understand, and maybe this comes from the Bible, right? You treat me as I treat you want to be treated.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't necessarily have to be religious. You can still be a good moral person who has a core that you want to live to certain kinds of values. And I don't think it has to be religious. So I don't bemoan the loss of the religiousness in this country as being the root of this. What I think is, for your other point is the more to the point, right? Which is, it's all about greed. And when people see other people making $100 million a year, and it's still not enough, or 50 million, or 5 million, right? Those numbers are so unreal that it changes how we see life going on. And I think greed is at the root of so much of what's going on. And it doesn't mean that I don't think believe in the free market. It doesn't mean that I don't think that everybody should have the opportunity to earn a lot of money. It's how you earn the money, right? If you own 500 or 1,000 properties and you're a big-time real estate investor and you treat your tenants with respect and you take care of the properties, you know, fantastic, good for you. But if you buy those properties and then you become like a slumlord and you don't treat people well and you don't take care of the properties and you don't do what you do and you keep changing your name so nobody can find you, I don't have a lot of respect for that. I don't think that's good money earned. Yeah, you've made a lot of money, good for you, but you've treated a lot of people badly. And I think there should be room in this country for both, for making a lot of money and treating people with respect and helping them when they're down. And that's the kind of rebuilding I want to do. When I talk about rebuilding America one house at a time, that's what I'm talking about. Thanks for your call, Patricia. 404-872-0750, 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time. Be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. 55 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, One House at a Time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB. Online all the time, thinklink.com, thinklink.com. Check out the ThinkLink store for all kinds of great content, information, webinars, the Intentional Investor Series, and a whole bunch of ebooks. They will be very, very useful to you if you are buying real estate. It's 56 minutes past the hour. Dwayne joins me on the line. Hi, Dwayne.
Oh, Lisa, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. What's your point?
Well, I just want to bring up a point that today is a great day to be an American. Despite no matter what's going on in Congress and what's going on in Washington, this whole thing has really opened up America's eyes to the conundrum that we're really in, that we've allowed Congress and Washington to put us in. In regards to the food regulation, I think your analogy of having the fox guard the hen house is absolutely right. But I truly believe currently that's exactly what we have, even with our government regulation. Everybody thinks that there doesn't need to be regulation, but deep down they know that there needs to be some sort of regulation. The problem is that we've got large corporations pumping tons of, I mean, just massive amounts into Washington.
You're breaking up a little bit, Dwayne, and you're making a great point here. I think we've
way too much corporate interest in the entire thing. I heard somebody bring up GMOs. Monsanto is a perfect example. We have these legislations that they're passed in the cloak of darkness, and the American people have no idea what's going on. So if you could eliminate that money, that private money, that corporate money that's getting pumped into Washington and truly get down to the core values of what our government stands for, and that's of the people, they are our elected officials. But what's happening is we've just got way too much corporate money going in there, and it's just not fanning out. And then you got a guy like Ted Cruz who stands up for what he truly believes, and all of a sudden he's labeled a terrorist by the opposite party. I don't really care what side of the aisle you're on. It's just opened up this wonderful discussion. So, anyway, just my thoughts.
All right, Dwayne. Well, I really appreciate it. I do think that there is a lot of name-calling that goes in, both sides against the other, which I think is unacceptable in D.C. There's no point calling somebody a gentleman if he's going to turn around and call somebody a liar, and that just doesn't fly for me. But I think the point of money, corporate money, getting pumped into D.C. is a really big issue, and unfortunately, the Supreme Court has yet another case coming up in front of it. They've already gone down that path, and they've said the corporations have the right to give as much money as they can, and they're trying to eliminate now, with a new case, any limitations, right, on how much you can give to an elected official, all in the name of free speech. And remember, corporations are people, too. So, you either have to decide that you don't want to have a government tainted by those contributions so that when they put out food safety issues, that they're truly on the behalf of the people. You either have to make that decision or you have to figure out some other way, because I'm just going to come back down to fox guarding the hen house isn't good, but I'd rather have the foxes guarding this hen house the way it is now than just throw it all to the wind and trust that corporations that answer to Wall Street are going to come to the right table. I just don't believe that will ever happen. 58 minutes past the hour. Music's playing. Our time is up. You can find me online at thinklink.com. Follow me on Twitter at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Visit the thinklink.com store. Check out the Equifax Finance blog. And don't forget to check out what we're doing on CBS News. It is way cool. Have a great week, everybody. I will talk to you again next Sunday. Enjoy the week. Money.